Welcome to the Disrupting Obesity Podcast. I'm Charlotte Skanes, and I'll be sharing ways to regain control over your body and lose an extreme amount of weight naturally. Being fat is about so much more than just the food. It's about your relationship with food. That means that dealing with your weight is about more than just the food too. You have to change that relationship. You have to start disrupting obesity. All right, flamingos, it's Ask Whatever number 12, and I'm excited for this one. I'm going to cover as many questions as I can because the backlog is growing again, and I want to try to catch up. I think I'm actually going to have to do some bonus Ask Whatevers over the next few weeks to just try and get things back under control. But keep sending your questions in. I don't answer them in order. I answer them based on my mood. There are questions in this episode I was sent months ago, and there are questions I was sent days ago. So please keep them coming. I absolutely love them. You can send them via my website, my DMs, the comments on any one of my YouTube or Instagram posts. I see them, all of them, and they're all loaded into a spreadsheet. So just when it's time to do another Ask Whatever, I can just scroll through and see what I feel like talking about. Here's the first of the questions I settled on for today. How do you only eat a small bit of delicious stuff? That's a great question. And I feel like you need to come at this from a couple of different ways. First off, you don't have to. There are lots of high volume, low calorie options that leave you feeling super satisfied. I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I've got some really great recipes where you can eat cups and cups of a dessert for fewer calories than a half a dozen cookies. But you seriously can eat a lot of delicious stuff and work it into your calories for the day. But that's not always an option. Sometimes you just want what you want and there's no viable substitute. I get that completely. There's no low-calorie Mars bars, right? And they're amazing. So what do you do? I'm not sure I've ever successfully eaten a half a one, and the bags of the mini ones are dangerous as hell because I just end up eating the whole bag. And yeah, I could freeze them, but I really like them frozen, so that's not really a deterrent for me. Okay, so what next? You find a way to make it work. You borrow from Peter to pay Paul. You've got a set number of calories you can take in each day and stay in a deficit. If you want that Mars bar, you're going to have to find the calories somewhere. And I strongly suggest you do. Or all you're going to do is keep thinking about that Mars bar. And I'm sorry for triggering your food noise. If it's any consolation, I'm doing it to myself too, because that's all it takes sometimes, right? Just hearing about a food and suddenly it becomes all that you can think about. Make it work and move on. It's 240 calories. That's manageable. And this is where I'm going to interrupt the rest of you just to speak to the Gladyses for a second with a little reminder that calories are very relative. When I started losing weight, I had 3,500 calories a day. I could eat a half a dozen Mars bars and still find a way to get into a deficit. I'm not saying those Mars bars were a nutritionally sound choice. I'm not saying it would have left me feeling full. But I am saying I could absolutely fit in 1,440 calories of chocolate bar into my day. The 2,000 calories I had left could work. If I did that now, the 300 calories I'd have left for the rest of the day would be just a little bit harder to stretch. Okay, how do you calculate how many calories a random piece of chicken has? So there are a couple of ways to do this. The most accurate way to do it is to weigh the meat before you eat it and then use your tracking app to calculate how many calories it is per gram based on whether or not it's white or dark meat and if you eat the skin or not. For things like wings, your app will have that information. If you bred them yourself at home, you can enter that information into your app as well. Restaurants here have to tell us how many calories are in the food, but I'm not sure where else that's the case. So I'll Google things or use my app if I've like picked up some fried chicken or something. There's more than one way to peel this banana. You take the top 5 or 10 search results and just do a loose visual average, right? When you can't be precise, just do the best that you can. How often do we change our TDEE as our weight changes? So that's your total daily energy expenditure. You want to take a look at it every 5 to 10 pounds. As you're entering your weight into your tracking app each week, it will likely be automatically recalculating your calories for you, but it doesn't hurt to double check. And I'm definitely not familiar with all the tracking apps out there. That market has just completely exploded, right? But yeah, you can just plug your numbers into an online TDEE calculator and make sure that you're still on track. And make sure you're only weighing yourself once a week. That's it. Anything more and the up-down roller coaster from hell will make you crazy and make you want to quit. Anything less and you're just not as aware as you need to be. What guidance do you have with regards to alcohol? So that's kind of nonspecific. So if you're asking me generally, I'm fine with it. If it's something you think you have a problem with that you need help with, you probably do. And there's nothing wrong with reaching out and getting some. When it comes to weight loss, you can eat or drink whatever you want, so long as you're in a calorie deficit. Alcohol, though, is a calorie dense liquid in pretty much all of its forms. Your basic liquors are like 65 calories an ounce. Liqueurs are more. Bailey's is 107 calories an ounce. 12 ounces of beer is about 160. 5 ounces of wine is about 130. So they're high, but they're also still workable numbers. Really watch your mix and move calories around. Have lower calorie, but bulkier choices for the rest of your day. You said you lost a lot of muscle mass. Being that you're in a good place, do you do things to bring back the muscle you lost? Yes, I try. I walk a fair bit, and I'm currently trying to get my ass back to the gym because I really like those machines where you choose how much weight is on it, and then you just do like a controlled movement in a super targeted area, and then you move on to the next machine and do it again with a different target area. I like those because they feel safer to me. I can hurt myself pretty easily, so I have to be very careful, but I really want to build muscle. It makes me feel safe. I got sick again last summer, ended up basically bedridden for the 6 weeks between and just after my two surgeries. And the summer before that, I was hospitalized for 2 weeks. And then right after I got home, I blew out my piriformis muscle again because it was weakened from the bed rest. And I ended up down with that for like another 8 weeks. So building muscle for me is about two things at the same time. And both of them are to make me feel safer. I feel safer because I believe that the stronger I am, the less likely it is that I'll get sick or blow out my leg again. But I also know that if I do get sick, I'll have muscle to lose. The recovery will be easier. But I need to have muscle on my frame so that if I get sick again, I won't lose the ability to walk. And then just the recovery time is absolutely key for me. Did you plateau? If you did, what steps did you take to start losing again? So I'm 100% sure that I must have plateaued when I lost the 200 pounds, but I didn't look at it that way. I'm not sure entirely how to define a plateau. And here's the thing, and this is why I didn't look at things that way. I didn't have a choice. You can call it a plateau, call it Oscar the Grouch, call it late for dinner. It doesn't matter. The solution's the same no matter what you call it or how you choose to think about it. The only choice you have is to keep going. Yeah, it's frustrating as hell, but you're frustrated because you aren't losing weight. Stopping all efforts to lose weight isn't going to help with that frustration other than you don't have to face it, right? And that's for sure not where you want to be. Significant weight loss doesn't happen in a straight line for anybody. I have talked to hundreds and hundreds of people about this. Nobody loses weight every single week when they've got a lot to lose. I'd really like to see us drop this language around weight loss completely, the plateau thing, right? It's a process. It's a series of different things that happen to get from point A to point B. I am not a mountain climber. Hopefully one of the Gladyses is, and she can set me straight on this, but I'm pretty sure that you don't climb the whole mountain completely vertically. Like I figure there's gotta be some kind of zigzagging, right? It's not one of those old timey cartoons where the guy just holds onto the rope that's looped around the top and hauls himself up with his scarf dangling down behind him in the wind, right? Like I don't think that's how it goes. I know that's not how weight loss goes. I'm trying to throw as many ropes down as I can, but you've got to grab them yourself to haul yourself up, right? The scarves are optional. I'm 60, and since 40, I'm losing muscle mass and I want it back. Do you consider women in peri or menopause in your ways to lose fat? Absolutely. And I'm going to answer this one now because the answer is so closely linked to the last question, at least the second part of it is. For the first part, you need to make sure that you're getting enough protein to build muscle. This is not my area of expertise. I know you want to be getting at least 0.8 grams of protein for every kilo you weigh, just from a well-balanced diet standpoint. But when it comes to building back muscle, lost muscle mass, and I don't even mean in the sense of the person who asked this question specifically, I mean, for anybody in this situation, you need an individualized answer because it's going to be very specific for each individual. The second part of my answer is connected to the last question, the one about plateaus, because no matter what stage of life you're in or what you're up against hormonally, the situation is the same. You need to be in a calorie deficit to lose weight. It's the only way. Do you use a continuous glucose monitor? Do you think it would be helpful? No, I don't use one. I do think they're very helpful for people with diabetes, and I'm just extremely grateful that I don't need one. But this question was asked in a weight loss context, not a diabetes management context. In that case, we're back to no. I don't think fixating on things like that are the best use of your time when you're trying to lose weight. You've got bigger fish to fry here. This is just a distraction from getting yourself into a calorie deficit. I mean, yeah, it's very interesting to see what happens when you eat different foods and how that affects your glucose levels. Calories first. Get that sorted out and then see what happens. What about when you go out to eat? Well, I track. The menus here have to include their calorie counts. If they don't include them where you are, try your app or Google it. Look on the restaurant's website. The count might not be on the menu, but maybe they have it with the nutrition information online, right? Just do your level best. Don't expect perfection. Just do the absolute best you can. If the chicken fried steak with mash and extra sausage gravy doesn't have a calorie count, load the individual items into your app and take an average of the top five or so. Do you enter your current weight into the TDEE calculator or your goal weight? That's a really good question. You enter your current weight because entering your goal weight would give you far too few calories for the day, and extreme deficits are just too hard to sustain. Can my deficit be created by exercise? Yes, it can. Absolutely. Do I recommend it? No. Is it an easy thing to do? Also, no. Does it eliminate the need for calorie tracking? Most definitely. No. This can start to turn into the same slippery slope of adding calories back onto your day because your tracker says you burned them. And that is as hard a no as it gets for me. Hard, hard no. Unless you're doing a marathon, like a real one, not a metaphorical, oh, I feel like I ran a marathon. An actual, you go for a big long run marathon. Never add calories back. So if you want to create your deficit with exercise, you're going to need to exercise a fair bit every day, every single day. And you're going to need to track your calories just as accurately as you would if you were just doing a straight deficit. It's hard enough to burn 500 calories through exercise, right? If you're off in your tracking, you can blow that deficit in a hurry, which means you also need to be tracking the calories that you're burning very accurately. And I know the next question here is, well, how do I do that? And it's a very fair question. So I'm going to give you some examples. You need to walk for 111 minutes at 4 miles an hour, according to Livestrong, to burn 500 calories. You can do it in an hour, so long as you don't drop below 5 miles an hour. And that's the thing too. For a lot of the calculations that are out there, the assumption is that you're doing all of the exercise all at once. And you and I both know that's for sure not the case when it comes to the way most people use their fitness trackers. I know very few people who get their 10,000 steps in all in a row. But it does matter if the exercise is spaced out or done all at once. 500 calories is only 2.5 hours of swimming in a row. Preferably butterfly stroke, but freestyle will work almost as well. But it has to be one of those two strokes. This is why I get so angry about the diet and exercise myth. Sure, fine. That's great advice, but execute it. For every doctor who looks at a struggling patient and suggests that they just move more, I want to ask them what their butterfly stroke looks like. And have they got 2.5 hours a day to pull it off? Because that's what they're asking. And they don't seem to understand either the ask or the question. I want to keep answering questions, but if you want to hear me go off about the diet and exercise myth, you can check out episodes 9 and 40. We'll link them in the notes. One of my problems is knowing what to eat. So that's the other half of the problem with the diet and exercise myth. And I'm almost as pissed about this one as I am about the exercise part, but I find it kind of funny in a way too. So, but yeah, it's tough because you're being given so much conflicting information about what you should be eating. There's never been a more confusing and less straightforward time to eat than now. And it's getting harder every day. Eat whatever you want. Eat the foods you know and love. Start by finding a way to get into a calorie deficit with the foods you're already comfortable with. It's not impossible. It's very doable, even if you think it isn't. Just less of it. You can eat what you want. You should eat what you want. Odds are good that you're going to eventually anyway, right? I don't want to be mean. I want to be honest. And I think it's important to say this stuff out loud because this is what happens, right? It's the deprivation cycle. You cut out or heavily restrict all the stuff you love to eat most. which makes you miserable. So miserable that you expect to see big losses on the scale. And then when you don't, you're heartbroken and frustrated and pissed off. And the longer that goes on, the more likely you are to pack it in. And the longer you deprive and restrict yourself, the more likely you are to binge because you feel like you've earned it or you just can't help yourself. So let's not do that. Small incremental changes are the way to go here. And small and incremental aren't the same thing. You want to be making lots of little changes spread out over time. You don't want to go from eating a large pizza on your own with all the sides to limiting yourself to two slices and switching to a cauliflower crust. It's a bad idea. Little changes. All right, let's deal with Gladys. We're getting closer to the end of this episode and I don't like her to have the last word. So this one was upset with my ingredients. New Gladys, same old complaint. There is a lot wrong with processed foods. And I know she was upset because she capitalized the a lot part. I get it. Processed foods can be scary, and some of them are. There definitely are things out there that are being called food that are more chemical than they are anything else. And I'm not a big fan of them. But I get so frustrated with the shaming on this one because it's just throwing up another barrier. It's making it that much harder for people who want to do something about their weight to feel like they can. And I hate the barriers. I hate the exercise myth barriers. I hate all the food barriers. The one where you have to cook your own food to lose weight, where you can't have any added sugars, where you have to track or eliminate all your macros. No processed foods, no dairy, only food grown by left-handed farmers. It's all horseshit. It's just barrier building. And why anybody who purports to be helping people to lose weight would be throwing up those kind of walls and alienating people is completely beyond me. And yeah, I do know that I'm saying that in a good for you Gladys segment, but I'm fine with alienating her. I want her to feel uncomfortable and like she doesn't belong here. She doesn't. All right, so let's do this. Here we go. All foods are processed. You pick it, it's processed. And yeah, I'm being extreme about it, but that's okay. If Gladys can take it to the nth degree, so can I. Washing food, packaging it, cooking it, all processes. Baking is a process, right? Even handmade sourdough made with hand-milled organic flour. So many processes. Doesn't it ferment? That's a process. Now, I know I'm being ridiculous, but I'm doing it to make a point. I'm pretty sure that most of us know that a carrot and a carrot muffin aren't the same thing. Another Gladys came really hard for me over a muffin recipe, but we're going to deal with that another episode. I have carrot muffins on the brain. But we know that. We know that. We don't need to be shamed into acknowledging that we're somehow better off if we eat our plain carrot sticks and forget about the muffins. But she's setting up a false choice. And that's why I get so frustrated. This isn't a choice between a carrot and a carrot muffin. It's between a carrot muffin and a chocolate fudge cupcake that they call a muffin because it's so big that it's basically just a muffin-shaped cake, right? That's the choice. So please stop blithering about the fucking carrots. If the choice is a carrot or a chocolate muffin, the muffin is going to win every time. The carrot isn't even part of the conversation. Nobody gives a shit about the carrot when there's a whole bunch of muffins over there. So how about if instead of pimping carrots, we celebrate better choices? There's nothing wrong with a carrot muffin. Mine are around 80 calories and the chocolate one from Costco, the big chocolate muffin, yeah, those have 600 calories. So stop bitching to me about processed foods and let people make the best choices that they can. Okay, so speaking of cake, do you have a Greek yogurt hack to make banana bread like you do with this cake? Okay, so I know I don't usually talk recipes over here, and this may seem a little bit out of left field for the podcast, but it does tie thematically with what we've got going on here today a lot more than it probably seems at first glance. And not only because I was just talking about cake. It's hacks like this that can help you cut the calories out of your favorites so you can keep eating them. Little modifications that help you do things like cut 1,000 calories out of a pan of brownies with one ingredient swap. And that would be the aforementioned oil out, Greek yogurt in. And to answer the question, yes, you absolutely can do this with banana bread. I've got a recipe for banana muffins in my cookbook that you just make it into, it's a terrific cake. But it doesn't matter what kind of cake it is. I'm not going to gatekeep here and release them all one at a time. You can make any cake with Greek yogurt instead of oil. You can swap them at a 1-to-1 ratio, and it doesn't even have to be Greek yogurt. You can use applesauce and save the same amount of calories. That's what I do with my carrot cake. Now, I know I've mentioned my recipes a couple of times today, so I will let you know that there's a link to buy my cookbook in the notes, or you can find it and my weight loss workbook on my website, disruptingobesity.com. You can also download my free guide to getting started for the last time, and please don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss anything. There are lots of big things in the works over here, and it's also the best way to help me out on my end. Have an amazing week. Keep trying, keep tracking, don't be intimidated, and don't give up. You've totally got this. Thank you for listening to Disrupting Obesity with Charlotte Skanes. If you know it's time to take back control, lose the weight, and keep it off, reach out to me privately with a direct message on Instagram that says ready, so you can start disrupting obesity.